Welcome to Nourish and Shine, where I talk with passionate leaders in the fields of nutrition, functional and integrative medicine, and wellness, providing inspiration and practical advice to nourish your mind, body, and spirit, optimize your health, and live a whole vibrant life starting now. The Nourish and Shine podcast is provided for educational and informational purposes only, and it is not medical, mental health, or healthcare advice. The information presented here is not intended to diagnose, treat, heal, cure, or prevent any illness, medical condition, or mental or emotional condition. Please make sure you consult with a trusted healthcare professional before you make any changes. Welcome to Nourish and Shine. Today I'm talking with Sarah Stinson. Welcome, Sarah.
Hi, Amy. Thank you for having me on again.
Yeah, thank you for being here. If you missed it, Sarah came on back in 2019 and talked about healing touch as well as resilience. And today we're going to talk about integrative therapies and eating disorders. But first, Sarah, I'd love for you to tell our listeners about yourself and how you came to specialize in working with clients who have eating disorders.
Yes. Thanks, Amy. I love that question because I'm out of a box. I don't fit in a box, and how I came into working with eating disorders doesn't really go in a box-like approach either. So in my training for my master's, I was at St. Cloud State University, and I was given the wonderful opportunity that has been life-changing to help facilitate a group for people struggling with eating disorders. Yeah. And interestingly enough, that was in like 1990. At the time, you did not hear as much about eating disorders. And in fact, I cannot even remember that I had any classes that talked about eating disorders. And having not had that own personal experience, it was eye-opening to me when I had that opportunity. And I truly believe and am grateful to this day for the education, the experience, and the stories that my clients at that time shared with me that truly led me on the path of being able to get certified and working with people with eating disorders. And so that was the beginning of my journey, and it has continued now for 28 years. And I feel extremely blessed, and I'm very passionate about this work. And I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you and have others hear this to help one, and some of the myths about eating disorder, but also increase our awareness of how to really interrelate and connect with each other so that we can create an environment that really supports healthy, nourishing relationships with food and our bodies.
Absolutely. And I admire you so much in your work, and I just can't wait to dig into everything we have to talk about. We met actually, just prior to our fellowship we did together in integrative medicine. And I'd love to learn more about how you're working with clients now using an integrative approach to eating disorder treatment.
Yeah. So what I think is wonderful about eating disorders is that it was probably one of the first disciplines in my experience that actually involved a multidisciplinary approach. So when I think about it now and integrative medicine, it's almost like it laid the foundation for me to truly open up and move into that field of integrative work. Because when you work with people with eating disorders, at least in the settings I've worked with, it's truly a holistic integrated approach. So you're looking at the mind, body, and spirit when you're treating people. And you're also looking at all the modalities and therapies, interventions that might be beneficial to the person in their recovery journey. And so, it actually started in 1998, I think, when I looked at the research of massage therapy and how that had a positive impact on people's body image. So just doing chair massage actually decreased their cortisol levels and their preoccupation with their body and helped them to feel more comfortable in their bodies. And so I actually completed training as a massage therapist, and then throughout the years after that, I went on to do training in Qigong, healing touch, and then the opportunity in 2016 appeared to then actually attend the fellowship in integrative health and medicine that you and I met at, which was wonderful. So we've just continued to incorporate some of those therapies. So in an ideal setting, it'd be wonderful, and there are treatment settings that have this, that a client could come in and they could be set up with somebody that either did acupuncture or acupressure. Yoga therapy has significant research in the field of eating disorders and healing. Massage therapy, the energy therapies, along with psychotherapy, nutritional therapy, and then, you know, referrals for medical interventions as needed. And the other thing that would be ideal, and I think there's some treatment centers that have it, is actually creating that foundation for people to learn where their food comes from so they can develop a different relationship with food to truly see how it nourishes their bodies. So in my dream world, I would love to have a treatment center where the clients actually learn to grow their own food and cultivate it and then cook it to see all the wonderful things that it can do for their body and their mind and their spirit.
Oh, I love that vision. That's so in line with how I think as well. And when you talk about nourishment, I'd love to hear more about how you talk with clients about nourishment and how you bring up this concept kind of in the recovery process. Mm-hmm.
So the first step with every client is to truly hear their story. And in hearing their story, I really truly listen to what has the role of food and their body played in their history, if that makes sense. So I actually will have them write down, what is your relationship with food? What was it? What is it? And what would you like it to be? And the same with their relationship with their body and their movement and how they see themselves in the world and how they take up space or not take up space. And then from that, truly switching to what would nourishment mean to you and how would that feel? So maybe take a food that they feel is a safe food and then really looking not just how it feels physically in their body, but tapping into all their senses. So, you know, what does it look like? What does it taste like? What does it sound like? What does it feel like? How does it feed your body? How do you feel physically after you eat it? Do you have clarity? Are you foggy? Do you feel good? Do you feel bloated? Do you feel hungry? Do you feel satisfied? So really trying to help them tune into that, which, as you might know, can be very difficult in the early stages of recovery, because with an eating disorder, most often people are very disconnected from their mind and their body and their mind and their heart. Does that make sense?
Yes, absolutely. Are there ways, do you always start kind of with the food approach, or are there other ways to start becoming more connected with the senses that are approachable if the food may be too hard to work with at the moment?
Right. And so I want to clarify too, that when I look at people with eating disorders that come to me, they're more than that diagnosis. So really I'm looking at what purpose does their relationship with food and body serve to help them cope with life? So we really need to look at eating disorders sometimes as a gift, that there's something that we get out of it that helps us cope with imbalances in our life. So really I try to get them in their body, like maybe just doing a breath work, you know, like a heart math technique that I can walk us through shortly, or just even taking a moment in my office and to just have them notice in a minute, like I'll count a minute, like, what do you hear? What do you see? What do you smell? I really think that nature is a very powerful healing tool. So then giving them the assignment to go out and do like a mindful walk where they're trying to really focus every time there might be a thought of food that comes up or a thought of not feeling good enough in their body or in the world or in their relationships. Every time that thought comes up, can they distract themselves by just saying, okay, now I have to look, what do I see? Okay, I see the beautiful fall colors, or I see the leaves moving in the wind. So really trying to get them in their everyday life to connect with their senses, because to be honest with you, food is probably the hardest one to start with. So I build up to that.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what I was kind of thinking. Oftentimes food can be probably the most triggering or most difficult to access. So I think that's a beautiful way to do it. And recently I just talked about nature and all the powerful healing effects just in a little medical minute. And, you know, there's so much to say about the effects of nature. And I think one of the things we've seen with COVID too, is people potentially having less access to being in nature or to coping in some of the ways they used to cope. Are there other things you're seeing as far as, prevalence of eating disorders and kind of what's going on in that arena with COVID?
Right. And that's a great question. And it's interesting because I was first asked that probably 6 months into COVID. So towards the end of 2020, and I didn't really have any information or experience with my clients at that point. But by the spring of 2021, it was very evident. And you can look up the research right now that there was a significant increase in disordered eating and eating disorders. Partly what happened is some of the clients that I met that came into therapy right now are people that felt like they needed ways to stay healthy during COVID. And they were afraid that they, because they were home and isolated, that they would eat a lot, or any kind of compulsive eating tendencies they might've had, or stress eating would have increased. And then they felt like they were less active. So they thought they were doing a healthy thing and nurturing their body by changing their diet and their movement. So then they would go online and they would watch TikToks and they would watch other short videos on diets, basically, or they would watch Instagram accounts where people were showing their weight loss journey. And the challenge is, if anybody has a predisposition to developing an eating disorder, that can be enough to trigger a full-blown eating disorder. And so then that initial trend to stay healthy turns into something that's very unhealthy. And so I saw more of that, and both with the restriction and with the compulsive eating. Did that answer your question?
Yes. And yeah. The other thing I saw looking at the research, and I'd love to hear your perspective on this, is the increase in reliance on video conferencing and the impact that mm-hmm. has with eating disorder clients.
And so it's fascinating to me because sometimes I'm oblivious to things that are so obvious. I didn't think about it because when I'm doing my Zoom meetings, I don't see myself because I had already gotten rid of my image so that I could focus on the person, because it's very hard for me to get distracted by many images on my screen. And I didn't realize that a lot of my clients didn't know how to do that. So when we would have sessions, it could be anxiety provoking because they would be on the big screen. And as you know, we don't all look the same as what we show up on Zoom or video conferencing. And so it just brought back that attention to themselves and that scrutiny that many of them are already predisposed to looking at. And so then just trying to help people, one, if they need to minimize and not have their picture up on the screen until they're at a place where they feel comfortable enough to see the beauty that's within each of us that we see. But yes, there was a definite increase in discomfort with that and more preoccupation with wanting to change how one looks.
Yeah. And when it comes to social media, I know it's been in the news a lot lately, kind of the effects of Instagram, how basically it's toxic for teen girls as well as boys. So when it comes to social media and body image, what advice do you give to your clients about this?
Well, I know when we were talking earlier, I jokingly said to just stop social media and get off all accounts. But I say that in a way it sounds joking, but I also actually do encourage my clients to completely go on a social media diet. The challenge I have found is some people have businesses that their only way to get the business is through Facebook or LinkedIn or Instagram. And so what the other avenue would be is to really limit it or to turn off your notifications so that you actually don't get a notification every time somebody posts something. And then the other key is to really look for body positive Instagrams, feeds, and social media that supports health at every size. And like your podcast would be an example of one. And I've actually referred people to your podcast for that reason. But I don't know that we really, I mean, I really believe in our society today that we would be okay if we had no contact with social media for a week. And my clients that have done it for a week have said, I mean, across everybody has said, I feel better. I am less preoccupied with how I look. I'm feeling more confident. I'm feeling stronger. And they haven't missed out on anything.
Yeah. And that's, I think, everybody's fear is the fear of missing out. And I agree with you that it can be really hard when you're looking through social media, especially following like a lot of the influencer accounts or whatever, where you're really preoccupied or comparing yourself or comparing your life. But I think that message of following accounts that are body positive, and people who you admire and who are like you, or, you know, that you can relate to, right. but find that you have a healthy relationship with looking at their stuff and it's not making you feel. And I think that some of that is almost bringing a mindfulness to the experience of looking at social media.
So and, well said. Yes.
Yeah. And looking at how it's making you feel and those accounts that maybe aren't making you feel good or are making you right. judge yourself or, you know, them or whatever.
Yep.
Unfollowing those or maybe yes. when it's time to get off, you know?
Yep.
But yeah, I think
you articulated that really well. So really truly tapping into kind of your gut reaction to things and really honoring that and listening to that is so important. So sometimes I will give people kind of that assignment when they pull up people's feeds or accounts. What do you feel like? What does that do to your mindset? What, how, you know, what does that feel like in your heart even? And if it's not in tune with what you want to be moving towards, then you're right. Let go of those. And I should preface, as you know, Amy, I don't have a cell phone still. I do not have a Facebook. I am not on any social media. And I did start watching some YouTube so I could even know what an influencer was because I didn't even know what that was. And I have to say, if I was a young girl, that would be so challenging. Even the ones that are trying to promote healthy body image still have a very limited representation of body shapes and sizes, genders, you know, ethnicities in their videos. So
I think that's a really important point.
Yeah.
And when, oh, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say too, I think the one thing about eating disorders that is really important to know is that it doesn't discriminate. Anybody can have an eating disorder. And I think we still can fall into that idea that it's only a certain category or it's only females and it can be anybody in there. And more that we're seeing that.
Yeah. And I've heard the there's been an increased prevalence in men as well.
Correct. Yep.
I'd love to talk about, you mentioned that there's some myths around eating disorders. Mm-hmm. Would you be willing to share some of the top myths you hear and kind of set those straight?
Yeah, sure. Well, one you just kind of hit on is that only women have eating disorders. And I think one of the things that's been probably has been the most challenging in my career is when you have young men that finally have the courage to come forward and talk about their eating disorders, they feel so isolated. So there is more so now. There didn't used to be a lot of support. And there were some sports like wrestling that they had to get to a certain body size or shape. And so that was challenging. So I can remember a client that decided that he did not want to go any further with his recovery because he didn't want to lose his scholarship for wrestling. And I think, again, I'm out of that field of working with athletes in college, but I think there's been a positive shift in the sense that I think they're trying to really get away from some of the tactics that they used back then. The other one is that you have to be rich and white and female to have an eating disorder, which is totally wrong on all aspects of that. It doesn't matter what your socioeconomic status is. And if anything, right now, you see some more challenges in lower socioeconomic areas because they don't have access to safe places to be active. They don't have access to food. You know, you've heard of the food deserts, and sometimes don't even have transportation to get to medical appointments.
Yeah. And one of the podcasts I really appreciate for kind of widening the lens on eating disorders and like mindful and intuitive eating is the Food Heaven podcast. And if you haven't checked it out yet, I think that is really a great podcast and is really diverse in like who they speak to. And I appreciate that so much. When it comes to mindful and intuitive eating, I know we've talked about this kind of in the past on other episodes, but I'd love to hear your perspective on this and how you might incorporate this with your clients.
Mm-hmm. That's a big question. Okay. So, you know, you've done such a great job kind of summarizing and reflecting back things that I've said. And so I think kind of going back to what you said, even with the social media, with food is to truly allow people that opportunity to find foods that make them feel good and to really start tuning into their bodies. And so, like you said, let go of accounts that aren't feeding you. The same thing with food. So I will actually have people write lists of foods that they feel good. So when I say feel good, things that make them have energy, things that help their mood, help their focus, may help decrease joint pain, But then also giving their trigger foods and then helping them understand with the trigger foods, I'll do a mindful eating exercise specifically with a trigger food where they bring it in. And then we walk them through one, you know, what's an ingredient in that food? Where did it come from? Can we, and then extending gratitude to the people and the world and the environment and the universe that brought that food to fruition in front of them. Cause I don't think we realize the hundreds of people that go into one ingredient, you know, getting one ingredient into a food to get it to us. Because most of the times people will bring processed foods in like candy bars or cookies or things like that. Not just a fruit, but even a fruit would have many people that would have been engaged in that process. Then having them tap into what does it look like? What do you hear? What does it feel like? And then once they take that bite, what do you notice happening in your mouth? Do you notice your salivary glands? What does it feel like on your tongue, on your teeth? At what point when you swallow it, do you lose contact with it? And then where do you feel it? And as they're doing that, being mindful of what are my thoughts about this food? What has this experience been like? And then I'll have them extend that to eating a full meal mindfully like that. So taking one bite at a time, putting the utensil down, tasting it, experiencing it, having said their gratitude for it, and doing the whole meal like that and noticing, do they end up eating less? Do they end up realizing that there's foods they've been eating that were more out of habit or stress relief than were about enjoyment or nourishment? And then having them do that with a snack. Also trying to create an environment that doesn't have a lot of distractions so that when you're eating that you don't have the TV on, that it's not the time where the family has discussions about things that went wrong during the day. So really creating that positive healing environment for you to have your food and to nourish your body. And oftentimes for single people, actually purchasing a place setting to have for them so that they're creating kind of that special environment and that sacred space. And then also teaching people to tap into their hunger. And this one's always the hardest, but really mindfully, what is my level of hunger when I start? What is it during the middle? And what is it at the end? And trying to learn to find what fits for them as far as their level of fullness before they stop eating. And then the other thing too, is just also getting like a container to take food, half of your food home when you go out to eat. Cause oftentimes when clients go out to eat, that's very anxiety provoking. And so they kind of tune out of all their hunger signals and their nourishment signals, and they feel like they have to eat everything. So just giving them permission to stop before they finish eating. And then the intuitive eating kind of goes along with that. So with intuitive eating, if I wanted a piece of flourless chocolate cake and I felt hungry for it, it felt good, but I had like two bites left, I might not finish it. Or I might decide that I want to eat, you know, half of my dinner because it feels good and it feels right, but I don't finish it all at that moment. I bring it home and I eat it again. But really listening to the cues of my body and trusting what innately I know to be right for me. So it's different in the sense that it's not a diet. Does that make sense? So it's not a prescribed way of eating. It's truly listening to your body and following that.
Yeah. And whenever I think of mindful eating and like coming into the senses, one of my favorite meditations is by Emily Fletcher, and it's called mm-hmm. the Come to Your Senses Meditation. Mm-hmm. And it really is just that, like waking up all of your senses and coming to the eating experience fully present. Yeah. And also I think one of the big pieces I found is letting go of judgment. And I find that oftentimes we have like this feeling of how much we should eat. And letting go of that should and yep. listening to your body. And so maybe you might eat less, but maybe you might eat more. And maybe that depends on, you know, a bazillion things, but it could include where you're at in your menstrual cycle. It could include your level of stress, but kind of acknowledging those, witnessing, but without judgment. So you, like not bringing in like the self-criticism and the other things, mm-hmm. But just like noticing. Mm-hmm. And then also, kind of adjusting as you go. Cause I think one of the things I've really found through mindful intuitive eating is like the learning process, like how much you learn about yourself. Uh-huh. Just when you start listening and get out of your head, you know?
Yeah. And I think, and you hit it. I mean, like John Kabat-Zinn's, you know, probably know his definition of mindfulness, but that awareness that arises from paying attention on purpose in the present moment and non-judgmentally, you know, and I think that's hard. And I will say for those people listening that if you're in the beginning stages of recovery or even renegotiating your relationship with food and your body, you need to be patient because that inner critic and that inner voice is so loud. We call it the eating disorder voice, that it will take time for you to retrain your brain to follow that other path and go on that other hiking trail of mindfulness and trusting yourself and letting go of the shoulds or the catastrophizing or the minimizing. And it is completely possible. And that is the reason that I stay in this, is because I've seen people recover and heal.
Oh, yes, I love that. And, you know, I think you brought up really creating that special like space or special environment. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And not having like the news on, like I mm-hmm. often hear of like, oh, I have breakfast while I watch the news, and being in that state of like fight or flight and yep. really, not allowing yourself to shift into that parasympathetic, like rest and digest state when you're eating changes right. the eating experience, but also I think changes how you're able to digest and like the food in your body. Right.
Exactly.
And kind of the nourishing qualities of the food. And I feel like if you're in kind of a more rested, ready yeah. to like receive the food state, you'll also be able to allow it to like nourish your body more fully.
Right. And there's a great book. I think it's called The Slow Down Diet. And in that book, he talks about that, and you said it perfectly. And so like, you know, even if you're enjoying a piece of chocolate cake, if you're doing it and the whole time you're eating it, you're thinking, I shouldn't be doing this. I'm going to gain weight. My blood sugars are going to, you know, increase. This isn't good. My nutrition should be really unhappy with me. Your body's in a state of stress. So your cortisol levels are up, and then your body digests it differently than if you're eating it and enjoying it and being grateful for every bite that you have and truly being present with it. And the same goes for exercise. If I'm exercising because I'm afraid I'm going to have a heart attack or I'm going to be out of shape or whatever your reasons, or I need to lose weight or I need to burn calories, your body is not going to get the benefits of if you were doing it to truly feel good and move easier in your body and to enjoy that movement.
Yes. I love the term joyful movement. I've been hearing that more lately.
Yes.
And I feel like there's such a difference between, a focus on calorie burning and the focus on just like moving with joy and like how it yeah. noticing how that feels good and what feels good.
Yeah. I could have my way. I would also have all the numbers taken off of every device in a workout facility and get rid of yeah. every scale and truly let people, you know, pay attention to what's happening to their bodies. Yeah. And, you know, I have a hula hoop in my office and people often ask, but, you know, people just pick it up and start hula hooping, and that's movement. So really going back to even when you were a kid, and what did you do that made you laugh and that you looked forward to doing that involved movement?
Yes, I love that. And that's sometimes just the funnest, like there's Daybreaker is an organization I love, and they have like an online platform, but they also have events in person. And one of the things they do is various like short dance classes that you can watch.
Oh, I love it.
And they're really... they're so much fun. And it was something I would never tell you I love to dance before, but those I really enjoy because you can kind of let loose and move your body in ways that feel good without having to be in a room full of people. You can do them at home and like kind of have that little safety net, but also to be able to move and like be expressive.
I love it. And you know, there is tons of research that shows that movement, often termed as exercise, but I like to reframe it, has significant effect on decreasing anxiety and improving depression. So both of those things go hand in hand with most people that have eating disorders. So there's so many benefits, but again, it has to be that joyful movement and something that you can do the rest of your life long-term.
Yeah. And I think that's really important too, is thinking of it like across the spectrum. Like I love, like right now we're working with our kids, like teaching tennis and golf and dancing and all the things, but these are things that you can do kind of throughout your life, which I really appreciate. And like finding just hobbies you enjoy, even like you said, walking in nature or, you know, sitting outside and just enjoying what's around can be really, really beneficial. So,
yeah. And I think everybody needs to look like if they have an eating disorder, where their relationship is with movement and exercise, and then adjust it accordingly. So I have a lot of clients that are in larger bodies. And so movement is very intimidating and it's very hard. And so they might need to start with just 3 minutes of walking or 3 minutes on a treadmill, and not to get discouraged with that. But instead of trying to do like 20 minutes or the recommended 30 minutes a day, 5 days a week, really start where the person's at. So really tuning into that and really supporting each other in that movement. So find other people that are in that same place with you.
Yeah, definitely. And I know this is something we're both pretty passionate about, but before we started, I said, is there a better term than eating disorder? I think talking about the term like a disorder and like the label that we give to people. And you said this was kind of a passionate topic for you too. Yes. I'd love to hear your perspective on this.
So I had a professor at St. Cloud State that I will forever be grateful for, because she said that she was in private practice at the time. And so again, this was in the 1990s, but you still had to, in order to be reimbursed by insurance, you had to give your clients a diagnosis. And she chose not to. So she chose to accept out of pocket self-pay only because she didn't want people to become that label. And she didn't want people to feel that everybody fit into these little boxes or these little descriptions and labels. And for me, what I found is that as I've evolved in this field, not only does it become something people label each other with, but it becomes limiting. And then it becomes kind of a prophecy. And to me, we all have our own, what I call Achilles heel. So there's something in our life that will show itself generally physically or mentally or spiritually if something is out of balance. So when I get clients in, I explain to them that I look at their journey with an eating disorder as a way for them to be able to have that information given to them when things are out of balance. So if they're starting to be more preoccupied with food, or they're being more preoccupied with a number on the scale, or worrying about what people think, really looking at what are the underlying issues that have fueled those fears and those anxieties, and then helping them to kind of peel away those underlying issues and develop healthier coping strategies. So for instance, when I had my back injury, I herniated a disc. What I learned for myself in that journey was that when I was doing too much or taking care of people and not taking care of myself, then I would get this like stabbing knife pain in my buttocks. And so I was able to use that kind of as my thermostat, that when I started feeling that way, I needed to stop, or I had the opportunity to stop and reflect, like, is there something that's out of balance? And if so, do you want to do something about it? Or do you not want to do something about it? And if I didn't do something about it, then the situation would get worse. And so I see eating disorders the same way, or any kind of mental ailment. I don't like that word, but any challenges with mental health. So when I did a presentation earlier this year, I had some final thoughts. And so I'm going to just share these now because it fits right in. And so when we look at depression, anxiety, and I could even think of what we term as eating disorders, I look at them more as disruptions in the health of the brain, which then affects the whole person physically, mentally, socially, emotionally, and spiritually. Therefore, the approach to helping people with eating disorders and mental health issues is truly that multidimensional, holistic approach. And that really understanding that compassion, kindness, and acceptance can go a long way in the healing journey. And so I see myself as a partner with my clients. I am not better than them. I do not have more information than them. I am just there to witness and walk their journey with them and provide them maybe tools and skills that they might not have found on their own, and truly offer that support. And then really recognizing that the challenge when we label people with diagnoses is that we miss their story. We miss that opportunity to see each person as a unique individual and to really listen deeply to what they need and where they want to go.
Oh, that just totally struck me. And I just want to repeat it. When we label people with diagnoses, we miss their story. Mm-hmm. And I think that is just so worth underlining and paying attention to. And I know we talked a little bit about sometimes the traumatic experience of having an eating disorder and being in the healthcare system. And can you speak a little bit to that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just some ideas you have for clients who would be trying to cope with that.
Yeah. So first I want to just preface that at this point in time, healthcare is probably one of the most I don't know if I want to say volatile, but there's so many challenges for providers, and my heart goes out to them. One, that they're so limited in the amount of time that they get with a person. So generally a person gets a 15-minute appointment with their provider and they have multiple issues when they come in. So I'm saying that because I think that we do an injustice to the experience that our clients have when they come into the medical or healthcare field already, just by one, limiting their time. And it's more of this kind of, I can't think of the words I want to use right now, but just people lining up, coming in, give me your number and you get into an office. Does that make sense?
Yes.
And so I think with that kind of in mind, when we go in, often healthcare is driven by reimbursement by insurances. And so what that entails generally is a diagnosis, a label, and certain information that insurance companies require. And insurance companies supposedly require what's called your weight and your BMI. And I have done a lot of education over the years and need to do more moving forward to help providers understand that when somebody with any kind of pain or trauma or in insecurities about their weight or their body image, the last thing they want to do is go to the doctor. In fact, years ago, there was a research study that showed 75% of people do not go and seek medical attention because the first thing that happens is they get weighed. So if you're out there and you have a healthy relationship with your provider, you can let them know, and I have my clients do this, that you do not want to get weighed. If they say they have to weigh you for whatever reason to get reimbursed for the visit or something, then you can say, you can weigh me backwards, but please do not put it in my chart or in my after visit summary. And they are allowed or able to block that so that the patient doesn't see it, or they can keep it in their office. And then if somebody would come back, they can say, this is the reason I did not give it or put it in their chart. There are certain times that people will need a weight, and that's generally if you're going to have surgery or a certain medication that is based and titrated by somebody's weight. So really just being able to have that voice. I actually used to have cards that I would give our clients that say, don't weigh your self-esteem, it's what's inside that counts. And then on the back of the card, it said that for many people, weight is a very complicated thing. And so giving them the support to not get weighed. The other thing is really trying to help providers understand what it feels like for somebody with an eating disorder coming into the office, and having those numbers kind of define who they are from the perspective of the provider. I will tell you, in the past few years, at least in our system, I've seen many, many providers that have much more knowledge about eating disorders and the complexity of some of those factors, and are really opening their hearts and minds to being compassionate and kind with these clients, which is wonderful. And then the other thing is just to really be honest with your provider and let them know what your struggles are, and if you have an eating disorder, and if you're binging or purging or restricting, because there's many consequences with your physical health and emotional health that can come from those behaviors. And we want to make sure that we're able to give you the treatment and the therapies that you need to help with that, so that it doesn't escalate any of the physical problems.
I think that's such important advice. You have so much to share, and I just love every time I talk with you. That's why I'm like, oh, I'm so excited to have you back on. Are there any last thoughts or words of wisdom or things you wanted to share before we wrap up today?
Yeah. Well, first, again, I want to thank you, Amy, for one, just allowing this subject to be discussed in this way. As you know, I'm very passionate, and I'm just so blessed and grateful for the work that I've been able to do over the years, and for the people that have crossed my path, both clients and educators and teachers and authors and therapists and everybody, you know, in any modality and therapy. And just to know that even though it's a complex issue, the beauty in it is that there is hope and recovery, and that each of us have our own challenges on our journey in life, and to really embrace that and to try to find the people in your life that are going to support your recovery, support who you are as a person, and continuing to work to allow our authentic selves to shine.
Thank you so much for listening to the Nourish and Shine podcast. I'll be back next month with another amazing guest. If you enjoyed this podcast, please make sure to leave me a ratings or review on your favorite podcast listening platform. Also, check out my website. It's amysopola.com, where I offer one-on-one packages, online courses, and group classes. I'd love to connect with you on social media as well. You can find me on Instagram and Facebook. Until next time, may you be nourished and well.